Hola, mujeres. My name is Gladys Godinez, and this is the Courageous Mujer Podcast, where we embrace, uplift, and celebrate Latinas in Nebraska. The love and response to the show from all of you in the past year has been phenomenal. This show is made for you, and you all have showed up. I'm so excited to introduce you to one of my friends and your colleague. Her name is Karina Perez. She is the executive director for Centro Hispano in Columbus, a proud mom, a leader in the state of Nebraska, and just a real cool, courageous mujer that you get to meet desde Compton to Nebraska. So here we go. Let's get to know Karina Perez. Bienvenidas a Courageous Mujer Podcast. My name is Gladys Godinez, and I'm your host. Today, I am so excited to let you know that I am sitting here with my friend, my colleague, Courageous Mujer herself, Karina Perez, out of Columbus. Bienvenida. Karina, how are you today?
I'm doing great. I'm anxious. I'm excited to be here joining you this morning.
It's been a long time coming, Karina. I got to tell you, it's been since last year I started, and I started writing a list, and it's just so hard porque conocemos tantas mujeres, and just know that you have been on that list since the beginning. I'm just like, I need to get to Karina. So I'm so grateful for your time today to join me and sharing your story. I'm excited for other Latinas, little Latinas, to get to know you and just be inspired by your story. We have so much to share, you know, and sometimes we don't have the opportunity to share it. So I'm all here for it. Let's go ahead and get started. Share with me something that's keeping you excited right now. What is something exciting in your life?
Right now, what's really exciting, my kids. They're in the middle of finishing the school season. So I'm really excited because I have a little one who's about to be going to school after the summer. So I'm enjoying the time that I have with him now before all three are in school now. And so that's keeping me up. And I try to keep my excitement around my family and away from work. So I'm really excited for that.
Yes. And you know what? Un día, they're going to listen to this and they're going to say that was my mama. So let's call them out, right? Let's name them. ¿Cómo se llaman tus hijos?
So soy Isabela, and tiene cinco, and then I have Jade Sarai, and she is three, and then Abram Zev, and he is two.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. They're at the cute, adorable space, but at the same time, they're everywhere, at the same time. Well, that's very exciting and joyful, too, because it does warm your heart when you talk about your kiddos. All right. Well, let's, we're all welcoming, and I want to make sure that we understand here at Courageous Mujer Podcast that we welcome everybody with their identity and ethnic identity. So if you could please let me know your ethnic and your ethnic identity and your pronouns.
So I identify as either Hispana or Latina. My parents are from El Salvador, so they're both from El Salvador, both were born and raised there. And so, my pronouns are she, her, and hers.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about it. You mentioned your parents are from El Salvador. Are you willing to dig into your history, your immigrant story?
Yeah, of course. So my parents came to the U.S. at a young age. My parents were both very, very young. They had just gotten married. My parents also have been together since they were 12 and 13. So they are, you know, the very traditional Central American immigrant story. My parents then immigrated to California. So I was born in California. So I'm an LA born child, raised in Compton, which it always throws people off. But then my parents said, you know, they were going to move us to a suburb in LA. And they did that. In the meantime, though, I will be very honest. I don't remember a lot of my childhood. That could be for a million reasons. But a lot of the things that do stand out from my childhood is one of my younger sisters was very sick. And so those are the kind of memories that I flash back to, you know, times in the hospital, being with our sister and supporting our parents in that kind of role. I have four sisters, and so we're a very big, like, family-oriented family. So it's five of us. We've all grown, and we're all back home. So it's our parents really instilled that in us. They didn't have parents growing up, so both of them were almost raised with their grandparents, and so although their moms were alive, they weren't with them growing up. And so my parents felt that need to connect us in a way that they never had. And so it instantly gave us that support within each other. And so we've grown, and now we're still texting each other every day. And so we're that family. And so we grew up and we had a great life. You know, I think back to it all the time about our parents' immigrant story. And I think what we have now is what they thought they were going to have and what they envisioned for themselves. And so I think at some point it's also really hard to take that in for them. And I think that's a lot of immigrants, to be honest. I think they envisioned what their children got to experience or what we got to experience firsthand, what was going to be them. And I think a lot of the people coming to the U.S. feel that way, that it's going to be this experience off the bat. And for them, it was work, a lot of work. And so they ended up moving due to my looking for better jobs, and then for my sister, a better opportunity for medical, seeking medical attention. So they moved to Nebraska. And we've been here since 99.
Well, it's so interesting because you are from the West Coast. You moved from Compton. How did they even know about Nebraska? What happened there?
My uncle lived here. He lived here and he said, "I trabajo." And my dad said, "Okay." So it was my mom's brother. So my mom was all about it, you know, and they brought us here and we lived in my uncle's basement. You know, it was a family of seven living in my uncle's basement that was not finished. It was a little, we had a mattress and we made do. And, you know, and I still remember all of it. Just those are the pieces that I remember. Just the excitement though is what I remember. Like, whoa, this is new. Or even coming from Omaha to Columbus the first time, it was a hot day. And I was not expecting that because everyone said it was going to snow. And so it was not snowing. It was the middle of summer and it was hot as can be. And the drive felt like an eternity. It was way before that highway was done, or even it was like in the middle of starting, if I recall. And it was just corn stalk everywhere. And so that's what I remember first coming here.
You know what's interesting? Same scenario. So my mom's sister, mi tía, is the one that called us and said, "Hey, I trabajo aquí." And then very similar to living situations. And we lived in a traila with two bedrooms and we slept on the floor for a few months before we could find our own trailer home, you know? So that experience is very humbling porque we see so many families now that are currently going through the same thing. And often wonder, voy a salir de esto? Am I going to get out of this? And, you know, I really enjoy reflecting that because at that time you don't feel like you are, nor do you feel poor. Do you remember feeling poor or sin nada?
No, I really don't. And, you know, when they had done an interview in Columbus for me on the Telegram. And then I remember that his header was hard life growing up. And I had him retry. I was just like, I genuinely hate saying that I had a hard life growing up. It could have not had everything that I think people envision for what a luxurious life or whatever you want to call it would look like. But I was like, I don't want to go out with the heading title labeling my life as a hard life. I think I live a very blessed life in the sense that they did everything they could to get us here, you know, in this place, because now I look at it, it's like all those things are what brought us right now to what we have. And so, yeah, I definitely didn't feel poor. I think our parents work, you know, to give us food every day. And I think that's what, to me, it's like, oh, I have food and shelter. I'm solid.
Golden. Yeah. Frijoles y huevos, yeah, tortillas.
Honestly, good. And they did, you know, and they made sure we had everything we needed. We needed shoes, you know, they worked. And so I remember that transition from my uncle's house to our first apartment. We went from the basement to a two-bedroom apartment. And, you know, it still, that felt exciting. It was a place to call our own. And so we did that. We were all now in elementary. And so it was the first time I really had a school setting. So I was pulled out of the middle school year in California. So by the time that I got here, I was starting school for the first time really in this public setting. And so only student of color, aside from one individual, Linda, I still remember her. We connected, but she didn't know Spanish. And so I was trying to figure out like, oh, not a lot of our classmates look like me, but I adapted really fast. You know, I think it was something I learned. I also came not knowing English. And so at the time our schools were still figuring out what ESL was. And so I went through some programming. In a couple months, I had learned English, and then I was off. I loved reading, so I really enjoyed school. I elementary, middle school, and high school, academics were my strong suit. I tried sports. I was below average. I mean, I'm not going to say I was good. I just wanted to do it. And then, so I stuck to what I knew, and I participated where I could. I made my friends of the mixed kind, you know, like Columbus grew as the demographic grew, my experiences grew, because then my classmates started to look older friends. So then I decided that I wanted to be the first to step away from home. So I decided for college.
That's a different story than I've heard before. And I'm really hearing that you embraced your community and your community embraced you to some extent, you know, like the sports we can't handle because we have it or no lo tenemos. Either we practice or we have, you know, like I'm happy to hear that that was your experience and it's different than others. So yay for that. So, but it cannot be easy to be the first one to step out and say, mom, dad, me voy, to go to college. How was that experience for you?
No, my mom cried for the longest time. I remember even to the day of dropping off, she cried. I chose Creighton, which is a struggle in itself to get into, to be honest. And so, but they had a hard time. They didn't understand why. I think too, you know, we grew up in a very faith-based household. So it was, let's stay together. We're, you know, this is where we can move forward together. And so I wanted to keep that part of my faith, but tell them like, you have to also trust me. Like I can be an adult. And so they did, they let me go. And it sounds weird to say that, but you know, I've always wanted to have my parents' permission, you know, and give them what they wanted. And so our dad was always very academically supportive, almost like a really big supporter. So to the extreme, he was really invested in our education. So while my sisters did community college, he wanted to see like, okay, fine, let's see what else is out there. And Creighton was not for me. So it was not the best experience for me. I think it brought out what I wanted to know in life, which is I really identify with being a Latina, and I did not have that there. And so I didn't think that was me, to be honest. I don't think I saw it till I didn't have it on an everyday basis. And I even miss speaking the language. Like I miss speaking it at home and being with people who wanted to connect with me on that level. And so I transitioned to UNO, where was my high school sweetheart was also at. So that was also a very hard transition because my mom thought I was doing it for love. My dad thought I was doing it for love. And I was like, nah, I'm going because I want a new home. And yeah, I loved you. No, it connected me. And I think I did the full college experience. So that the good and the bad. So I think, you know, it led me to really understand what I love to do and what I wanted to do. And I also worked throughout all of it. So it gave me a lot of exposure to the nonprofit world and I really enjoyed it. And so I stuck that out.
Well, you know, all I'm hearing is a lot of courage, not only to bring your parents along for the ride of college, you know, and saying, we're going to try something different, pero la misma vez, you saying, you know, this is a prestigious university. It took a ton for me to get in, pero you're not for me, you know, and that could have not been an easy decision for you. I know my little sister Rose struggled in Creighton University a lot, and you all were around the same year there. And if it wasn't for a supportive network, I don't know if Rosangela would have pushed through Creighton, you know, and would have probably made a different decision of moving out of Creighton and done what you've done. So can I tap in? Because a lot of our listeners are college-aged. Or young professionals. And I don't want them to feel alone in this if they have to make a hard decision like this. ¿Qué era la diferencia? What happened at Creighton University? And what was that difference when you went to UNO? What happened at UNO that you're like, this is me. This is where my heart is. I understand and I feel welcomed and I feel like I'm a part of this college.
I think for me, Creighton, the hard part was academically, I knew what I wanted to do. And I think there was just upfront barriers there. I got into the nursing school, which is one of the hardest programs to get into. And so when I got in, my advisor immediately said, well, switching you from a 4-year traditional route to a 5-year. And I asked why, like what identified me as the reason to go from a 4-year to a 5-year, because then it was pulling me from classes that my other nursing classmates were in. My roommate was from Columbus. We knew each other. And our parents had mutually agreed that we were going to be roommates. And so we were both in nursing school. So I knew like I was going to be off of our schedules. And it just felt like, okay, I wasn't at that capacity. Mm-hmm. And so they were putting me in programming that they felt better fit my identity. And so I think at that point, it felt more pushed on me than me wanting that. And I think there's a difference there where like where I know I would need it to where they felt like I needed it. And so it didn't feel good. It felt like, oh, well, I'm already looking at a 5-year route. I mean, which in the end happened, but you know, I wanted it to be my choice.
But it was your choice.
And so
yes,
it was not the same. And so, and I will say, you know, like my little sister went on to go to Creighton. She loved it. She had a great experience. She graduated from Creighton, but I think the support she had there too. Also, she came in way better academically suited for this. So, but I will say it was just, I think everyone has a different journey. They'll find what they need in the places that they look for them. And so by the time that I got to UNO, what I did find was a community of people who are like, yeah, come hang out with us. Like, come join, like, we'll provide you support. And so I ended up joining SLG or Sigma Lambda Gamma Sorority Incorporated. I feel like I have to say it fully. and, you know, I found my lifelong friends through that organization. And so, but I also, you know, it led me astray to things that probably did not help my academics. And so I think just finding that right balance with it. And also I had the responsibility to help my parents support my academic goals. And so I worked 3 jobs during school, and I knew if I wanted to do that, I really needed to keep that all up. So, but yeah, that was that journey.
And similar to so many of us, okay, we needed to work full time, you know, and or find different part time jobs to be able to not only pay for our own expenses, but also help our family back home. That's something that not a lot of people understand that we're going through while we're trying to keep our academics in college up to standards without going into probation.
Yeah.
I thank you for sharing that.
You know, and I even looking back, you know, I think some of my jobs through college, I worked at Legal Aid in Nebraska. So that was a really great experience because I think it really opened up to also needs in the community and what I was like, wow, like there's actual free stuff helping out people in our community. And like, you know, that's how I really found out what nonprofit was. But then I had jobs like, you know, I worked at Radio Lobo under promotions, not the most recommended job as a college student. And it ended up putting me at clubs in the middle of the night. But I will say, you know, I think it allowed me to see people and connect with our communities. And so it was an interesting journey for sure. And at the time too, you know, I always get this expression wrong. My husband now, who was my boyfriend then, he started his business. So, you know, we were 22 and 23 and we went full in on that. And so life taught us a lot through that too. And it didn't play out the way we wanted to. And I think we learned what being business owners were too, of a construction business is not always, it doesn't always pan out to what we expect. And so that led us to home. Once we figured that out, we ended back home at 23, 24. So.
Well, after college, you started a business, you came home, and I really love, and I want to put a heart around Columbus because that's how you called it. You know, you said, I came back home. So you have made a home out of Columbus. You came back, you started a construction business. Cuéntanos what happened after you graduated. So did you graduate with that nursing degree then? Are you a nurse?
No. Oh my God, no. Communications, but no, I hated nursing. I figured that out the hard way. I knew that first year that was not for me. I think with our sister growing up sick, I thought that was like that was helping people that way was what's going to fill some of that void and sadness, but it didn't. It was not the route for me. But we actually started that business before we left Papillion. So before we left Omaha, we started it and we did it for about 2 years, and it didn't go. It didn't pan out, you know, some contracts didn't pay. So it sunk us under. And so I think at that time, being 22 and 23, it was really hard to take that in. And like, where do we go from here? Like, how do you restart? And so by that time we were engaged and Aaron said, let's go home. And we came back, and I went back to the first thing I knew that I had done in school, which was dental assisting. So I ended up doing that for a year until this position was being interviewed for. And I said, why not? I don't have the experience. What do I got to lose? Let's put our name in. And I did. And they, 3 interviews later, they gave me a shot. So,
oh, look at that. And how did you find the courage to put in your resume for a position that you didn't know that you would qualify for because of your qualifications? Because it's very interesting, porque a veces we think, oh, I'm going to look at this job description. I don't have the qualifications, so I shouldn't even apply, you know, but you did it anyways, and you got the job.
I was also 24, so I think at the time I was just like, what do I got to lose? My sister works at the police station, and the then chief had emailed her and was like, I think you should tell your sister to apply. And I was like, okay. So my sister brought it up to me and I said, yeah, sounds like something. She's like, it sounds like something you would love to do. And I'm like, yeah, we'll see. And then, you know, I definitely have to shout out Santiago, all the individuals on the board that were there that were like, let's give her a shot. She's 24, fresh off of nothing. And let's see what she's got. And so I'm really grateful. There's some really great candidates in the pool. So to be given the chance, I think, was courageous of them. And it made me feel courageous. So it was really exciting. And I think this work has really allowed me to fulfill something that I wanted to be doing in my life. So,
you know, I know where you work at. And I think we're so informal that we're like, todos saben, you know? But where is it that you applied for? Where is it that they gave you a chance? And how long have you been there? Talk to us a little bit about your experience.
So I currently work at Centro Hispano Comunitario de Nebraska. For all those who formerly want to know our name, we go by Centro Hispano most of the time. But we're in Columbus, and we're a nonprofit agency that really focuses on fostering intentional change for immigrant families, learners, entrepreneurs. And we do that through a variety of ways, through programming, direct services, and advocacy. And so we really have kind of honed in on figuring out how to represent rural immigrant Nebraskans who have made these communities their home, and how do they feel the sense of belonging in their communities. And so that's what we do on a day-to-day here. And we have a tremendous staff, always cheering us on, literally. And they're all incredible women, bilingual, Hispanic, Latina women who also feel a drive for their community. So I've been very fortunate to find them along the way.
And I've told this to you before plenty of times, but I'm going to just go ahead and scream it since I have a mic. I want the whole world to know, Karina, that the state of Nebraska is lucky not only to have you, but your staff in Centro Hispano here in the state. You are, for me, the nonprofit to follow in regards to being Latino-led, Latinx-led, in regards to the services that you provide to our communities, and the grace that you all do it with, porque no es fácil, right?
I was like, stop, are we crying? I'm not okay.
just go ahead and breathe. I just think it's, if we could just put you up, you know, like, I wish that you would understand, all of you, because you're in the room, how awesome you are. It's really awesome to see it. It's hard to believe, no? Porque sometimes we don't hear about it and we don't understand all of the work that goes behind all of the great work you do, because you do pre-GED, you do immigration, you do all kinds of services. During COVID-19, you were front and center in regards to assisting all of our Spanish-speaking populations throughout your area. And I always wondered, I'm like, why? Why are we not lifting this organization up? Why isn't this a model for the rest of the organizations that are trying to help similar populations? So shout out to you. Shout out to your staff. I think you guys are doing awesome work. And I'm so happy and grateful to know you, some of your staff, but I do know all the hard work that you all put in.
Speechless. And my hands are like clammy as can be.
I really am grateful for you all. And I hope we can celebrate you more for all the work that you do. So tell me, how can you, or let's say a little young Latina, because there's a ton of us, dude, that are just trying to help our community. ¿Cómo comenzamos? How do we start?
That's a hard question. You know, I think we all want to figure out what's maybe wrong, what's being held back in our communities. And sometimes I think we are so wrapped around that we can't even get to the actionable pieces, you know? And I think that's where we found our piece, where we're like, let's make some of these things actionable. Let's start what seems small, and, you know, it'll snowball itself to this place. And so, you know, it wasn't very long ago that we weren't doing very cater-centered work around welcoming and belonging. And now, you know, we'll have a full-on devoted full-time person doing just that work, and, you know, around DEI, and how do we move that needle, you know, with actionable pieces. I think more than anything, I love where you said it really is about courage to step outside of that realm of like conversation to action. And I know we've had this conversation in the past that I think a lot of our communities get stuck in the happy conversations, the what possibilities could exist, that we feel like that's enough. I think we've sat at that place where we feel like that is enough action on our end. Our community's talking about it, our community's doing this, and it fills that bar, you know, or that level that you feel like you have to hit. And I think we stopped thinking about, okay, well, we've got the conversation, we got the concepts down, now what? And so, like, how do we make some of these things tangible, and how do we put them into practice? How do we turn them into policies, you know? How do we advocate? And so I think that's where we started to notice, and where we started to change some of our game on how we approached our community. And we made them a part of it too. And I think that was a big thing, that a lot of individuals find Centro to be their home, that they come here knowing that it's a place where they feel included in the work, and then they can claim whatever we do, they can claim, you know, like, our community is doing this. Yes, yes, you are, you know, and like, I think that's a big piece of it too. I think we get in this where we come to a place where people want to have ownership of who's doing this and who's doing that. And I think where we need to regain our focus is that we all want to be doing this. We all want to be actively working on this matter of welcoming, of inclusion, of equity, you know, of belonging. And we should all be in the space doing it. And it shouldn't be like, well, Centro Hispano got it taken care of, because it's not just going to be us who needs to be doing this at the forefront. It needs to be our communities together. And so I think that's where we have stepped into some difference. And I will say, I think as BIPOC-led organizations serving BIPOC communities, I mean, I was just sharing this just yesterday, you know, Rose was on the call. I think sometimes we don't have this infrastructure or operational, like, lens, because we're always stuck on this programming. Like, we have to move forward this work, and realizing that we also need a strong foundation. And a lot of the times, you know, and I'm speaking on the dollar end, people aren't giving to those things for BIPOC leaders. And so how do we get them to see the importance of a solid foundation in order for us to have solid programming and continue this amazing solid programming that most BIPOC-led organizations have? And also, how do we give opportunity to have more BIPOC-led organizations who are serving these communities, and not just, you know, what we're accustomed to, which is majority white-led organizations serving our immigrant and BIPOC communities. And so I think that's what I would say is some messaging there that I feel strongly about, especially in rural Nebraska. I think we have a lot of different groups doing a lot of amazing work, but most of the time it isn't the individuals who look like the communities that they're serving. And so that lens of what our needs aren't always fully met. So,
I'm just going to break down BIPOC. It's Black, Indigenous, people of color populations and communities. And then when you're talking about individuals that look like us, leading organizations like yours or ours, we find sometimes the hurdles are that we're not getting the support that others that do similar work get the support for. And there's data around that. You and I have read data in regards to, I'm moving into this conversation, but I'll come back if it's not necessary. But there's data that can see a white man steps into a room with a funder. That white man has a higher probability of receiving funding than me as a woman of color stepping in that same room, doing the same work and asking for the same amount of funding. Either I don't get the funding or I get a limited amount of funding for the work that we do. And we do just about the same, see no more, because we have the understanding, lived experiences, and the community behind us that we can serve them. So it's so much just within that. I've had conversations with my husband. I'm like, I see it, but I also know that because you're a man, we may be getting more funds than just women stepping into the room, you know? And that's interesting to see, hear, and believe, because you're as a young Latina, I'm trying to think, okay, yeah, Karina's got it. You know, she's an executive director. She's got her own nonprofit. She's getting her own space. But in this space where we're currently at, we still see barriers and or some things that we need to overcome to be able to have successful organizations and the support, financial support. Because, you know, it's great to have support, but if we don't have the financial support, we also cannot do as much as we would want to do.
Yeah. And I think it's so hard because it's a really hard topic to talk about out loud without feeling some sense of repercussion for just talking about it out loud. But I think we're at a point where people are noticing that there's a lot of disparity between BIPOC-led organizations and white-led organizations doing the same work. And so, I've been very vocal about it the last couple of years of how growth for an organization of ours has, I'll say we've had tremendous support because there's a lot of great individuals who see the need for our communities. And so I'm excited about that conversation is moving forward because of that there's people that are in our corners, foundations that are in our corners, you know, donors that are in our corner that are like, yes, we know that there's needs here. And so I think continuing that conversation so that happens to other organizations and smaller BIPOC-led organizations that are growing and are needed in their communities, continue to have healthy conversations about what this could look like if changed, or if it continues to change, I should say. And so I'm excited for that. I'm excited to see what community of BIPOC leaders rises out of this too. I'm always excited. You know, we barely have found this group of strong Latina women that I can connect with. And that's been an extraordinary change for me, especially in a role of an ED and how lonely it can get. Even more as a woman, even more as a Latina woman. And so that's been really exciting.
Yes. And I'm very honored to be in that room. And that has helped me too. I've expressed the loneliness of that, you know, porque a veces te quedas and you're like, we got to do all of this. And it's all in your heart and it's in your passion and it's in your soul and you want to move it forward. Pero a veces te quedas sola and you're just like, am I the only one experiencing this? Am I the only one going through this right now? And we're not, you know, and us hopefully building community within these roles and finding each other and supporting each other, because I think that's what it is. At the end of the day, it's unconditional love for each other and support for our growth, because we all want to see each other succeed. And, you know, at the end of the day, Courageous Mujer Podcast is for that. It's for us to support other Latinas and through their journey as they move forward. So I've asked you about your journey. You have shared with us a ton of stuff. I want to talk to little Karina. Can we talk to her just for a little bit? If you saw little Karina down the road, you know, she's, in middle school, high school age, What would you tell her? What advice would you give her?
Weird, because little Karina was also weird, so she continued to be weird. So I would say, you know, it's going to happen. You know, keep on going. You will fill your needs. And I think my cup became fuller and fuller as life continued to happen. And I look back and, you know, you always get asked, like, what would you change or what was different and whatever journey. And I would say, you know, it's turned out great, you know. And that's coming from a middle child. So for those who are into birth order, you know, it's been a great journey. And so I would say just keep on, you know, whatever the saying, keep on going or keep on moving on or whatever it is. I'm awful at
Saying. No, oh my goodness. I'm the worst. Rose and I always laugh at each other because it's like, is it that? I don't know. And then we had to Google it. It's okay. You're right.
It's even worse in Spanish. Like, I was going to start saying ni de aquí, ni de allá. Oh, don't quote me on anything. But, you know, I don't know. Now that I have kids, it's a lot different because I want them to also aspire and, like, believe that they can do extraordinary things, whether it involves an education or not. I want them to just feel whole and full. And I think that's when I look at our immigrant families too, that, you know, they may not have all the things that I think people expect being here in the U.S. And so, but they could still fulfill so much and, you know, grow up to have extraordinary lives like I feel I had. And so, I don't know, I hope to continue that and anything to encourage other young Latina women who are moms. And I just thought in itself a message of you can have a career, you can be a mom, you know, you can do it all. And I think that's been something that's been hard for me to balance and figure out. And it's not easy to do that. And coming from very heavy, traditionally mom focused roles, it's been a hard thing to battle. And so young me would say that mm-hmm. it's doable. You can have that family, that home, that family and that career.
I love it. I love it. And, you know, what I'm thinking is let life flow or just allow life to happen, because that's what you have done. You have allowed life to happen and you have gone through it fearlessly. Me imagino with some tears in the end, you know, here and there.
But God knows I'm a crier. I am. I'm surprised I haven't cried today, but I'm a bad crier.
We've earned our tears, Karina. We can cry. It's okay. And then my mom yesterday, we were having a conversation in regards to courage. And she said, todo a su tiempo, mija, you know, because she's seeing my growth también. And she's like, todo a su tiempo. And you've allowed that to happen. And I think it's just beautiful how your story has gone. You know, yes, you've had hiccups. Yes, life has thrown you some curveballs. Pero aquí estás, you know, and you're doing great. And you can tell not only by your awesome organization, but just you as an individual, as a person, have done so much great stuff and great things and more to come, porque you're not done.
No, there's some great stuff that we hope to come back and share. We really have amazing stuff happening at Centro, and, you know, just from the clinics themselves to a lot of different changes that our organization is going through with growth. And so we're excited to be able to share that with our communities too. And even here in the northeast part of the state, you know, we really want to make sure that people feel like there's different places and communities that they can go to no matter where they're at.
Pues Karina, if a little Karina out there in the world is saying, I really want to meet her, how do I get a hold of her? How do they get a hold of you? They can come visit you at Centro Hispano, I'm guessing.
Yeah, anyone's always welcome to come to Centro Hispano. Facebook is probably your best professional way to reach me. I have my Facebook page up. You'll see my great content there. It's not much. Or LinkedIn, you know, I'm not really on the full LinkedIn train yet, but it's there. I'll check it. I mean, I'll check it and stuff, but that's some of the links that they can follow. Centro Hispano has a website. We have a Facebook, actually. Follow Centro Hispano's page. That page is popping all the time. It has great information. Really good stuff any communities, we're always trying to shout out anyone doing amazing work across the state too, and connecting people. And so if you ever have a question there, even if we're not in your community, or even if you want to come down and experience what it is that we do, you're more than willing to volunteer. We have people volunteer from all over the state. So we're always excited to welcome new people in. And we love doing food. So come.
Traigan comida.
Siempre traemos comida.
Come, yeah. I'm like, come hungry or traigan comida. Una de dos.
Either or is preferred.
Thank you, mujeres, for listening to Courageous Mujer Podcast. I'm your host, Gladys Godinez. You can find us at Spotify and Apple Podcast. And while you're there, make sure to leave some love and write a review. You can also find us on Insta, Face, y el YouTube. Courageous Mujer Podcast is brought to you by United by Culture Media, based out of Lexington, Nebraska. United by Culture Media's mission is to create a safe and authentic space in which the diverse rural story exists. Don't forget to click on our link tree to follow our work and get involved. This podcast has been directed and written by Gladys Godinez, produced by Chris Cox, and edited by Elizabeth Macias.